What's up, guys? It is draft season in full swing. We are going back to back. We dropped 6 prospects last night. We're dropping 4 more tonight. And who knows, we may drop 4 or 6 again tomorrow. We're going 3 days in a row here at the Ethos Grizzlies podcast draft coverage. Isaac and myself, favorite time of the year, unless, of course, the Grizzlies are playing for a championship, but they're not. So here we are. Isaac, I gotta say, man, every year that I've been doing this, I start studying these prospects. And when you really start digging into these guys, you learn a lot. Like one of the guys that we're going to talk about tonight, EJ Liddell, I did not realize how good of a help defender he was and stuff until I started digging into video on him, and his instincts, his athleticism, his length allows him to get back even in the half court to block some shots. And it's just freakish, man. Like I'm trying to avoid, like, there's guys that I've liked for a while. We talked about Patrick Baldwin Jr., but last year there were a couple guys that this dude would fit perfect on the Grizzlies. I hope that they target this guy. And I told myself I wasn't going to do that this year. And then here I am watching these videos, and it's like, I can just imagine EJ Liddell and Tripp being on the floor, and the way the help defense would be, it'd be nasty. That would be pretty tough to score on for sure.
Yeah, I think when you start breaking down these guys, like, again, man, a lot of these prospects already had a beat on. Like, I liked a lot of these guys. Definitely 4 guys that we're going to talk about tonight, I liked all of these guys. But delving into the film, I think a couple of these guys I really like even more. Just finding out even more things about them, because I watch a lot of college basketball anyway, so I'm familiar with most of these prospects. So watching them in games and stuff, it's a little bit different when you start breaking down film and you really – dig into their game, see what they do well, see what they don't do well. And you can sometimes find out a lot of new stuff about these guys, a lot of new things. And I'm excited to break these prospects down. Again, man, it's fast and furious, man. That draft's going to be here before we know it, man. We're going to try to get in as many prospects as we can. And again, man, I really enjoyed kind of breaking down some of this film this evening and excited to talk about these guys.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to the guest. I've reached out to a couple people for next week to try and get some guys on to talk draft. You know that we will have some guests on to talk about draft. We're kind of intentionally avoiding the top half of the draft. Not that the Grizzlies will not trade it up to get there. We don't know if that will happen, but there's a conversation that we have to have that we will save for a later date.
Definitely.
Like that's the coming. Back and forth on that one is going to be pretty interesting. So who do you want to lead off with tonight, man?
I'm going to lead off with Oshai Abaji, 6'6", 217-pound wing out of Kansas, senior. That's kind of what stands out about him, man. You don't usually see a lot of seniors this projected this high in the draft. 22 years old, played in 122 games in Kansas, started 116 of those games. As I said, 6'6", 217 pounds, 6'10", wingspan, experience. I mean, that's one of the things that I wrote down. Like I said, man, played 122 games. Total started 116 games over 4 years of career at Kansas. So he's a guy that's coming in, and I wrote down plug and play. I think he's going to be a guy from day one that can come in and play for you. And he's a guy that I really liked already, but kind of delving into the film, I think I like him even more, man. You look at the numbers, 18.8 points, 5.1 rebounds, 1.6 assists, still a game, 47.5% overall from the field, 53.4% on 2-point shots. 40.7% from three. That's 2.6 makes on 6.5 attempts per game. 103 of 253 overall from three. So he's not one of those guys that you kind of hoping that his 3-point shooting projects. You can see it. I mean, that's huge sample size. Shot 253 threes in his senior year. I mean, that's the first thing that jumps off on the film for Abaji is the shooting ability. Man, deep range on his jump shot. He's a bona fide knockdown shooter. I don't think there's any question. I mean, you got knocked down 103 threes, two out of 253. 253 threes is a lot of threes in a college basketball season, man. So he gets them up and does it very efficiently. Doesn't need a lot of room to get the shot off. I mean, kind of similar to Steph, man. He moves around a lot. Like, I mean, he's moving around all over the floor trying to get open. And by the time you kind of defense kind of catches up to him, man, next thing you know, he's launching a three and knocking it down. So he puts a lot of pressure on opposing defenses. And also defensively, man, he's also a good defender, big and strong for the two-guard position at 6'6", 217, has that 6'10 wingspan, which allows him to play even bigger. He's switchable on defense and able to guard bigger wings. So I think he'll be able to guard twos and threes because of that 6'6 size, 217, 6'10 wingspan. And he's more disciplined on the defensive end than most guys coming into the draft. And I think that a lot of that just has to do with his experience, being pretty much a four-year starter at Kansas. He's been doing it for a while and played big-time minutes on a big-time team. Was the best player on the national championship team. They won a national championship last year. He's the best player on that team. So that's a pretty good pedigree. Also, offensively, he's a shooter and a scorer. So he didn't put up big-time assist numbers, only 1.6 per game. But if you watch the film, I think he definitely has some playmaking ability. I know I liked when I watched him on the film, you can watch some of the passes that he makes. If you break down him, setting up teammates, throwing a lob pass, I think he has a playmaking ability as well. If you kind of look at some of the negatives for him, he's not a bad athlete. He does have some explosiveness, but really he struggles finishing at the basket, especially out of the half court. He seems like he has a tendency to kind of rush some shots at times inside. He does have a floater that you could tell that he got better and better at as the season goes on. But I don't think it's a major issue or a red flag, but that's just something that kind of stood out to me on film. He's a solid ball handler, but at times he can try to do a little bit too much and get loose with his dribble. He averaged 2 turnovers to 2 assists a game. That's something that he's definitely got to have to kind of clean up. But again, man, he's older, experienced player, four-year starter for a really good program at Kansas, best player on the national championship winning team. And if you're coming into this draft looking for a 3-and-D guy that's kind of plug and play it from day one, that can be that two-way player, I think Oshae Abaji is a guy that can really come in and fill that void. I mean, I loved him even before I started breaking him down. I think he's one of the most complete players in this draft. I think ready from day one, it can come in and help you on both ends.
Yeah, I think some of that's maturity, right? Because playing the 4 years at Kansas. But one of the concerns that I had with him is kind of that mid-range game and his ability to self-create. I don't disagree that he probably has some playmaking skills that we didn't see. One, I heard somebody make a comment the other day, and I thought it was fantastic. A lot of these guys that go to premier NCAA teams, you know, you're talking Duke, North Carolina, Gonzaga, Kansas, Baylor, Kentucky, you know, whatever. You can run off a list of schools that are elite in basketball. They play inside the system. And so inside of that system, there may be things that they have that are strengths for them that you don't get to see because they are being a team player and they're playing inside that system. And so I think because of the system design, because of what he was asked to do, you didn't really get to see a lot of that, the playmaking from him. But I think that it is there. I worry about him in the mid-range. I you said, you know, you mentioned his floater and he has worked on that. That's improved some, but I don't think that's I feel like that's kind of a question mark for him. Like, I don't know if it's a confidence thing, if he's just hasn't shot enough that he doesn't have confidence in it yet. But that's one area that I'm worried about with him. I love his catch and shoot ability. He shot like 45%. It was I think it was slightly under 45% on catch and shoot threes this year. And when we're breaking down prospects, we're looking at them through the glasses of how are they going to fit with the Grizzlies. And a guy that is a high quality catch and shoot guy is going to be like a hand in glove type fit for the Grizzlies because of Ja Morant. And he was really, really good from the corner. I didn't find the percentage before I got I didn't finish getting the stats on that, but I know that he shot the ball very well from the corner. And that is, you know, NBA, that's where you want to be. You want to be able to knock down that corner three, and he can definitely do that. I think his athleticism is fine, man. You know, he had a 39-inch max vertical at the combine. So, I, you know, like while he's not like that doesn't, that's a great vertical, but you didn't see a ton of crazy explosive plays from him throughout the year. I think that he's got that in him as well. I think that he would, you know, he's going to be able to run the break. His ability to slide into the passing lanes to make himself available is very, I remember watching Desmond Bane film whenever he was at TCU and how he was able to just slide his feet just a little bit to the left or a little bit to the right, just to open up that passing lane so he can get the ball and get that shot off. And he does that very well. Abai does that very well. I don't know that he's a shooter that Bane was coming out of school, but he is a guy, like you say, day one, some of that's going to be, again, the experience playing 4 years at Kansas. But I think that he's an impact player. And you look at draft age, in the past few years, we have witnessed guys fall down because of their draft age. They drop down the board. And, you know, everybody's wanting an 18 or a 19-year-old. They don't want to draft a 21 or 22-year-old kid coming out of college because of the extra years for development. And the Grizzlies have capitalized on that. You know, that's how you – you know, they trade
keep,
up. They
keep get, sleeping.
Yeah. You know, they trade up. They get Brandon Clark, and you saw what he was able to do for the Grizzlies in the playoffs this year. Done the same thing with Desmond Bane. So, you know, have to have 18, 19-year-old kid. Surely somebody is watching what the Grizzlies are doing, and they're like, okay, hey, we can go out here and get these guys that have played 3 or 4 years at college, and they can come in and they can play at a high level early. Look at what, you know, the Pacers drafting Chris Duarte
last year.
Yeah, you know, like he was an older prospect, but he came in and had a great rookie season for them. So that this is a guy, I think that he could come in and play rotation minutes right off the bat. I think that he's going to be a good defender right off the bat. I wouldn't say that he's an elite defender, but he has all of the physical tools. He's got great footwork, great agility laterally. And that 6'10" wingspan, man, when you're a guard, when you're playing on the wing and you got that kind of wingspan, it's going to allow you to be disruptive. And that's something I think you're going to see him grow. Like if he gets into the league and he's willing to accept the role of, okay, I'm going to be a shutdown defender on the defensive end and I'm going to get to my spots for these catch and shoot threes, he will excel in that and be in the league for a long time.
Yeah, you talk about the age thing. I think you're seeing a little of that with Keegan Murray, who is possibly my favorite prospect in this entire draft, especially kind of looking through Grizz-colored glasses. I think he'd be a tremendous fit on this team. I don't think they're going to be able to get up high enough to be in range to draft him, but you hear a lot of that with Keegan Murray. I think he's 23, and you hear a lot of old jokes with him, but I think he's so good that he's still going to end up going in the top seven somewhere in that range. But yeah, I mean, I think the Grizzlies have shown, whether you talk about Brandon Clark or Desmond Bane, that they've had a lot of success with that. And I think a lot of teams are going to start looking at that and kind of change their philosophy. But you brought up a great point about guys fitting in systems, especially when you're talking about big-time programs. And I think to even take that farther, when you see a guy like Abaji, who was the best player on that team, a lot of times when you look at their weaknesses, it when they get to the NBA, they're not going to be in that role. They're not going to be the number one guy, the number one option. So a lot of those things that you see might not be as big of a problem at the next level, because with him being the best player on the team and defense is keying in on him, he's the number one guy. He's at times has to bail him out of stuff. He's trying to do more than he would have to do on another level. And sometimes that brings up some weaknesses that might not be as loud, so to speak, on the NBA level, because they're not going to be in a position to have to do certain things. So that's kind of one thing that I've learned and started looking at that film that, again, especially when you're talking about a guy that's the number one option on that team, especially big-time teams, that's kind of something that you have to put in perspective.
Yeah. Do you have any concerns with him about his free throw percentage? You know, I know that people are probably going to start making fun of me about the free throw thing. But, you know, like, it's so weird to me
whenever
watching these guys that shoot the ball so well from deep. And then their free throw percentage is just not where you expect it to be. So is that something that concerns you with him at all?
Yeah, man. When I was looking at his numbers, I was thinking the same thing. We talked about Kennedy Jenner last night, a guy that's only shooting like 60% from the free throw line. And he's a pretty good shooter. Can even knock it out the three-point range. And you look at Abaji, who was a really good three-point shooter, even deep. three-point shooter, only shooting 74.3% from the free throw line. It's head scratch. I guess, like you said, it kind of goes back to what Brevin said, that the free throws are a different shot. I mean, it's a shot where you're not in rhythm, but you just got to stand there and shoot the basketball. And I think with a lot of these guys, it has to be mental, because with Abaji, there's definitely nothing wrong with his release. I mean, he's a really, really good shooter, so it's definitely not that. I just think it has to be some kind of mental block or focus when they go to the free throw line. But anytime a guy can shoot the basketball the way that he's able to, you think you get into NBA and get NBA shooting coaching, and I think they can get their free throw shooting up. But, yeah, man, 74.3, man, with a guard, you want that to be a little bit higher than that, man. I like guys to be up at 80%. I mean, I think that's what you really want to see, especially for a guy that can shoot the basketball the way he can, man. It's just no excuse to not be shooting 80% from the free throw line.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree, man. So we'll move on from him. My first guy that I wanted to talk about tonight, and, you know, I mentioned one of them already, my second one, but I'm actually going to start with Kendall Brown from Baylor. And he's 6'8", 6'11", wingspan, crazy explosive, 41-inch max vertical, high basketball IQ. Just I like, at his size, I like his playmaking ability. I like he – because of his vertical, because of his athleticism, you see him grab the rebound and like that inside out pass to, you know, offensive rebound, kick out to the three. You saw that multiple times on film from him, because he uses that size, that length, and that vertical to get up there and get the ball and then find somebody. You know, he does a great job finding the guy outside on the wing to knock down a three. Extremely high motor. The one thing, like one knock that I would have on him is his form. He's got kind of – it's – I was going to call it a hitch, but it's not a hitch. It's like a dip.
Squeeze his hand in, yeah. Yeah, like I know what you're talking about.
If he catches it high, if he catches it like at chest or shoulder level, he's dipping the ball down about to, I'd say, upper abdomen area and then going up with his form. And I think that that's something that he's going to have to work on moving into the NBA, because you've got to be able to speed up that release. You're playing against bigger, stronger, faster competitors, and so they're going to be able to close out on you a little bit faster. So not a great three-point shooter. That's definitely something that he would need to work on. But his versatility on the defensive end, you know, that 6'8 with the big wingspan, I think that he could guard 1-4 with his lateral quickness without problems right off the bat. And if he put on a little bit more weight, put on a little more muscle – he could even do some small ball five. And that's in the playoffs. You look at what the Grizzlies ran into with the Warriors. Having a guy that is that versatile is going to be important. You already have Jaren that is a switchable defender. If you get a guy like Kendall Brown in with this defense, you're going to add another switchable defender. And we've discussed the stuff with Dylan. Are they going to keep him? Is he going to get moved? What's going on with him? And if you are moving him, do you have that wing defender on your team to lock down the best player? Maybe that's Zaire. Maybe that's Desmond Bane. We don't know. I would say right now, if you move Dylan, you don't have that lockdown wing defender on the team. And so looking to replace that wing defender, Kendall Brown, I think, could be a good fit from day one.
Yeah, Kendall Brown, it's an interesting dynamic because we just got done talking about a guy like Ochai Agbaji. Who you kind of feel like is plug and play. With Kendall Brown is a guy who, and you look at these mocks, and we talked about this last night, guys are all over the place. Like, I've seen Kendall Brown up in the top 10 in some mocks, and I've also seen him down where 21, 22 in some mocks. So there's wide range. These mocks are very, very different. There's no consensus on a lot of these guys, especially these guys inside the top 25 or so. They're all over the place, and Kendall Brown is definitely one that you see him lower and higher in box, but he definitely has some things to work on. But if you watch him on film, definitely a lot to like. Like you said, 6'8", 201, 6'11", wingspan, still super young, 19 years old. You have pretty much a lot of the same notes that I have on a big time elite athlete, explosive, big time vertical. He's quick. He can really, offensively, he definitely has a lot of room to go there. But one thing that you do notice is that he can really blow by guys to get to the basket. That first step, man, he can just quick boom, he's to the basket, he's throwing it down. So he's always a live threat. So you imagine playing with a point guard like John Morant and what that could lead to. Like I said, still needs development on other aspects of his offensive game. needs to get stronger, as you said, as he can struggle at times against bigger, stronger guys. I've seen some guys really kind of work him over a little bit, man. You definitely got to get in that weight room. But I think as he puts on weight, 6'5", with that length, I think he'll eventually be a really good defender in the NBA. And on his shot, doesn't really have a quick release on his shot. Does not always get a lot of arc on it. And you look at his three-point numbers, 34.1%. That's not terrible, but it's kind of a small sample size. They're only 14 of 41 overall, and didn't even get one up a game. 0.4 makes the 1 point. We did shoot 1.2 a game, only 0.4 makes per game. So not a big sample size there. Like I said, only shot 41 overall on the season. But he's pretty much right now, offensively, he's pretty much all transition. I'm in the half court right now. I think he kind of struggles to create, but there's a lot of potential there, especially on the defensive end. And I think if he continues to work on his shot, I think he's a guy that I think will be capable of knocking down three. I don't know if he'll ever be a knockdown three-point shooter, but I think his biggest dividends will be paid on the defensive end. And I think that's where he has the most potential. And I think that's what a lot of teams are looking at, because, again, you see him up in the top 10, top 12 in a lot of these mocks. And, again, you go back to a guy like Obagi that I think is plug and play. I think looking at Kendall Brown, I think people see the size, the wingspan, and the potential. And I think that's what they're looking at with him, because I think potential-wise, he could eventually one day be a lockdown defender.
You know, we were talking about Tari Eason on the last episode, and I think, you know, when you're comparing prospects and you're discussing how these guys, that like the variance in between them, to me, looking at what Kendall Brown is able to do, he can finish with either hand. You know, like he's not a self-creation type player, but when he does get downhill, there's plenty of evidence of him being able to finish with his left and his right hand, as where Tari Eason is only going to be able to finish right-handed, like at least early on. Like early on, that he's going to have to put work in to be able to get to that left hand, because everything that you see from him in college, it was terrible. He just looked awful left-handed, and that's not something that you see from Kendall Brown. So I think the skill sets are very similar between those two guys. And to me, I would almost lean Kendall Brown there just because of his ability to finish with either hand. And that's, you know, maybe you can look at what Eason is doing and say, okay, that's something that we can coach. And we feel like, you know, the build, the way that he's got like the muscle on his frame, you think that he's going to develop into more. And you could absolutely have that argument. I don't know one way or the other, but right now, if you're looking more polished, that's easily Kendall Brown.
Yeah, I think I definitely agree with that. And again, man, I think, as you said, I think he's a guy that could guard 1-4. Like you said, probably even play some small ball 5 for you as he develops. And as you said, that's big in the playoffs. And you think of having a guy like that next to Jared and how dangerous that could be defensively. I mean, I think Kendall Brown is a really, really good prospect. Again, I think he's a guy that might take a little bit more time than some of the other guys that we discussed. But when you look at that potential, he's one of the guys that his potential is off the charts, and it could really, really pay dividends down the line for you. So it just depends on if you're looking for a guy that you can plug in day one and be a big-time player for you, or a guy that contributes early, or a guy that you're willing to get in there and put some work in. I mean, all these guys are going to need work. I mean, I don't really think this is a superstar draft. I think most of these guys are going to need some time to develop certain areas of their game. But I think it just depends on what you're looking for, a guy that can come in immediately, like I said, or a guy that you put the work in and pay dividends for you down the line. And I think Kendall Brown fits into that latter category. So it just depends on what you want in the prospect. But again, if I'm the Grizzlies and he's there at 22, he's definitely someone to be on my radar.
Yeah, I've seen like as low as late first round, and I don't think – you never know who's going to climb up boards. Guys always, you know, see guys every year that come flying up boards, and you wonder, who's going to fall, because in order for people to rise, somebody's going to fall. So that is, you know, and it's so – I think this year more so than last, like I feel like last year, like probably the top – maybe 10 or 11 guys, like you had a decent idea of who was going where, and then it kind of opened up. And I think this one is kind of after four, it really opens up, because you don't know which way that, you know, you can justify taking a guy like Jalen Duren if you're setting at six as the Pacers and you're just not in love with Keegan Murray. What's wrong with taking Duren? And they've got Isaiah Jackson, so that's a terrible example. They're probably not going to do that, but he has the talent. Like, once you get past the top four prospects in this draft, from probably 5 or 6 to 25 or 30, you've got a lot of guys that can go anywhere because of their skill set. So, man, go ahead.
I was going to say, yeah, I mean, they're always guys that are projected to go really high. A couple guys usually that end up falling lower than you expect, and there are always a couple guys that end up rising higher than you expect to go. And I think this draft could be wild because, like you said, outside of that top four, you got Jabari Smith, Chet Holmgren, Paolo Banchero, Zayn Ivey. After that, I mean, you could throw these guys in a hat from like 5 to 12. I mean, you look at these guys where you're talking about Shaedon Sharpe, Keith Murray, AJ Griffin. I mean, you got Johnny Davis, Dyson Daniels, Benedict Mathurin, Jeremy Sochan, Jalen Duren. I mean, when you look at that crop of players, I think people could have a myriad of opinions on those guys. Some could really love some of those guys. Some could not like some of those guys. I don't think there's a big separation between that group of players. So I think after the top four, we could see some wild stuff in this draft, but I don't think anybody really knows. And I think that's why you kind of see these mocks all over the place, because I think this is a draft where I think it's extremely hard to mock unless you're really talking to these teams and kind of getting a sense of what they like and who they like in certain spots. Because outside of that, I think trying to base it on talent, I think it's going to be really hard to do in this draft.
Yeah, a couple of the guys that we talked about last night are guys that you could see go flying up the board. You know, Nikola Jovic, Usman Jang,
yeah,
both of those guys, sure, have the tools, they have the talent, the size, the length to be up there. You know, if a team takes them in the lottery, I don't think that that's the craziest thing, because either one of those guys could turn out to be lottery talent. So it's – I just love the draft. I love watching and seeing, you know, guys who you think are going to go. And then, you know, Ty Washington, the variance, he's one guy that I have seen him go as early as top 10. And then I've seen him fall out of the first round in mock drafts. So I don't know. To me, I don't know how you can justify letting him fall that far. But, you know, team executives may see that differently. So, going to be a probably a lot of moving pieces on draft night to see who goes where, who falls, who rises, and what happens. The next prospect that we're going to break down, EJ Liddell, I kind of talked about him a little bit at the beginning of the show, and how as I'm watching film from this guy and then watching him defensively, his athleticism, first off, he had the highest standing vert at the combine at 35.5 inches. And then 38-inch max vertical, he's already an elite help defender. And that is the length. I think that we can just dub this episode the wingspan episode, because we got nobody in this episode that's got a wingspan less than 6 foot. Just big, long wings on this episode. And I like he – you're already seeing the production from him on the defensive end. He averaged 3.2 stocks per game in college. Very high basketball IQ. And one of my favorite things, like his ability to block shots is incredible because of that length. But he does a really, really good job of staying vertical and not committing those fouls. A lot of times, and Grizzly fans, you know this because of Jaren. Jaren's an elite shot blocker. But Jaren gets himself in trouble sometimes because he's trying to block everything. And EJ is a guy that does a great job staying vertical to where even if he doesn't block the shot, he's going to make them alter their shot and make it tougher on them to finish. He's a great passer for his size. He averaged 19, 8, and 3 assists this year. 77% from the free throw line as a bigger guy. 37% from 3 on 4 attempts. And 80%, so like, again, we're mentioning catch and shoot from Ja Morant. 80% of his threes this year were catch and shoot. They were assisted on. And so that's something he can come in and be ready. Like he can plug into the offense, play that catch and shoot. Taylor Jenkins we've watched them with Desmond Bane in his rookie season. And then this year with Zaire Williams, the rookies did not have a lot to do offensively. They were kind of, you know, park in the corner and be ready to catch and shoot. And so EJ Liddell, if that's something, our Liddell, if that's something that they want to do with him, he can excel in that. And I'm just salivating at the thought of him and Jaren being on the floor at the same time, because of like both of them are elite help defenders, and then being able to get down and protect the paint, protect the rim. I think it would be an insane combination. What's up, guys? It's David. Before we go any further, I've got to take a couple moments here to tell you about our new partner at Ethos Grizzlies, Ember and Valor. Ember and Valor specializes in beard care products. Let them take your beard to the next level with their easy two-step process. You get started with the beard oil to condition your skin and prevent the dreaded beard itch. You finish it off with Ember and Valor's beard balm to condition and shape your beard. Go over to emberandvalor.com right now and use promo code ETHOSGRIZZ for 25% off. Let them get you the beard you've always wanted. emberandvalor.com, emberandvalor.com, promo code ETHOSGRIZZLIES for 25% off. I've got to run it by you one more time. I can't allow you to miss it. 25% off at emberandvalor.com right now using our promo code ETHOSGRIZZ. That's ETHOSGRIZZ at emberandvalor.com for 25% off of all of their products. Ember and Valor makes all of their products using all natural ingredients. Get over there, check them out, use the promo code, let them know we sent you. You will not be disappointed. EmberandValor.com. Look good, feel good.
Yeah, EJ Liddell and the last guy that we're going to talk about, these are two guys. I put a list out on Twitter of players that I really like for the Grizzlies if they were to stay at 22 and 29. And both of these guys, if you kind of look at most mocks consistently, they're in that range. I mean, you expect both of these guys to possibly be there at 22 and 29. And these are guys that I really like. Like I said, I had both of these guys on the list. But after watching film on them, I think I like them, both of them even more. EJ Liddell, experienced man, a junior out of Ohio State. So he's 21 years old, grown man. I wrote that down, man. 6'7", 243 pounds, 7-foot wingspan. Like I said, another experienced guy. Like that had been stated, 3 years at Ohio State. Strong NBA body. Built like a tank. He can really bully smaller wings to the basket. Guys kind of bounce off of him, and he can bully and push guys to the basket. And you mentioned he's only 6'7", but he gets a lot of rebounds, almost 8 rebounds a game because of his size and strength. And like you said, does a good job of staying vertical when he's blocking shots, so he doesn't pick up the fouls. And that's kind of something that we've seen with Jared. Now, we'll see if that translates to the next level, but he did a really good job of that at Ohio State. Gives defensive problems because even though he's a big guy, he's quick. He can move his feet. A good ball handler. I mean, you can see him get the basketball, push up the floor, and finish. Three-level score is something that I really like, man. He can score the basket. He can do it mid-range. And he can also knock down a three-point shot. Can create his own shot. I mean, you just don't see a lot of guys at that size that can do that. He's a guy that you have a broken possession. He's a guy that you can throw it down low. And like I said, with his size and strength, he can push guys and get you a bucket in those situations. I think vertical athleticism is kind of one thing that I kind of worry about with him a little bit. I think he's not an above-the-rim guy. So I think on the NBA level, he's creative at getting shots at the rim, but I think he's going to have to get even more creative because I think you have a tendency to get your shot blocked if you're not a vertical athlete. And I think that's going to be could be an issue for him potentially on the NBA level. I don't think it's like a big red flag or anything, but that's just something I noticed when he's at the basket, doesn't get up super high on his shots. And at times he'll put up questionable shots. I mean, and that kind of goes back to my point earlier, when you're the best player on a team, especially on a college level, and you're asked to do more, a lot of times you're going to put up bad shots because you feel like you need to bail your team out. When you get in the NBA, he's probably not going to be in those positions. So that might not be as big of a problem. But for him, man, I think I love him as a prospect. And I think he would fit in really well with this Grizzlies team. Again, man, an experienced guy that I feel like from day one that can come in and do some things for you on both ends. And especially when you're picking at 22-29, I think that's what you want. The Grizzlies have done a good job of taking these older guys, like we said, with Bain and Brandon Clark. And if they would take Liddell, he's 21 coming in, a guy that's a two-year starter, three-year player, two-year starter on a good Ohio State team. I think he'd be a great pick. One other thing that I noticed on his shot, he's a good three-point shooter, but on the ones that he misses, they have a tendency to be line drives. Like either they hit the front rim or they hit back rim. It's not, and he doesn't usually miss left or right. But I think that's even better than a guy who's just missing shots all over the place. I think that can be coached out because he's usually on target. It's usually when he misses them, it hits front, it hits back iron, it hits front rim. So he doesn't always get enough arc on his shot. But he shot 37% from three in a pretty good sample size, 46-123. So he got 123 threes up. So he's another guy that, as I talked about earlier, that's not a guy that you're looking at that shot 25 threes and made 4 to 10 of them. And you're like, okay, well, he's shooting whatever, 37%, but is that going to translate? Man, he's a guy that put up a lot of threes, pretty good sample size to feel like you're pretty sure that he's going to be a pretty good shooter. Again, man, just cut down on those line drive shots. I did see some of those, but I mean, there's a lot to like with him. And again, man, grown man, NBA body, and I think that's going to allow him to step in and do some things. And I think you get him down to 22-29, man, I think you're doing pretty good.
Yeah, and, you know, I talked about Kendall Brown maybe playing the small ball five. EJ is definitely more equipped because of his size, because of that strength. You know, he's not any taller. He's actually shorter than Kendall Brown, but he's significantly stronger. And when you're playing a small ball five, you need to be strong because you're going to need to get in there and bang for the rebounds. And he's got it. He's got that. So that's going to be I'm calling the Grizzlies drafting him already, but it would be a great fit for the Grizz. And honestly, with the Grizzlies, barring Jaren Jackson being in foul trouble, you don't need a small ball five. You can play Jaren at the five, and he can switch on everything. He'll be fine regardless of who he switches on. And so, you know, getting another guy that's capable of doing that would just make your defense so much more versatile. That's something I hope we see. I was trying not to fall in love with prospects and hope that the Grizzlies go after them. But here we are, the second episode in, and it's happening already. So, man, we will this episode's just going to naturally be a little bit shorter because we're only covering four prospects. We'll wrap it up here with Isaac's second guy out of Duke, Mr. Wendell Moore. Isaac, I'll let you lead off. What do you like about him?
Well, a couple more things on Liddell, man, before we get on to Wendell. Another thing, man, from all accounts, man, great, great locker room guy, leader. And does things the right way. So I think that's another positive with him. Again, getting these older guys, man, I don't have any problem with it. If these other teams want to take these 18, 19-year-olds, it's going to take a couple years. Let them keep doing it, man. We'll take all the Desmond Baines, the Brandon Clarks we can get, man. I mean, that's how you build your roster. You got guys coming in that contribute for you on rookie contracts, man. That's how you can build a championship team. But Wendell Moore Jr., man, is a guy that I liked a lot anyway, but watching film on him this evening and over the last couple of days, man, I'm planting my flag, man. 22-29, if he's there, man, I hope the Grizzlies take him, man. 6'6", 217 pounds, 7-foot wingspan. You said junior out of Duke, 20 years old. Started all 39 games for Duke this past season. Averaged 13.4 points, 5.3 rebounds, 4.4 assists, 1.4 steals, 50% from the field, 54.4% on two-point shots, 80.5% from the free throw line. You like that? 41.3% from three on 3.2 attempts per game. 52-126 overall. The first thing that stands out to me with Moore is his defense. Moves really well laterally, which allows him to close off driving lanes of the opposing players. Has really quick hands, so he gets a lot of deflections. And he's another guy that will be switchable on defense at the next level. I think he can guard two, threes, fours. For you, him being 6'6", 217 with a 7-foot wingspan, it'll allow him that ability to guard bigger players. And I believe he'll be an NBA defender from day one. I wrote down pest, relentless, a guy that really gets into the opposing player's jersey, kind of Dylan Brooks-esque in that way, the way he's kind of a dogged defender where he's all over guys. He really cuts off driving lanes. Like I said, he has good length that allows him to do that. But when you look at him on the offensive end, his offense isn't bad at all, but he isn't quite as developed on that end of the floor as he is defensively. But he's really good in transition. A lot of that action is off of those open court deflections that he gets. He gets those steals and gets out and finishes to get up the court quickly. He played really well off Morant because he has some flashing ability. I think that there'd be a lot of assists there for Morant to wait and get to the basket. And as his handle continues to improve, I've watched a lot of film. When watching the film on him, I think he's a guy that could eventually be a guy that can play on ball. I really do think that's something that he'll be able to do as he continues to develop. And man, I'm just a big fan of his, man. If his offense catches up to his defense, man, I think he's going to be a problem. I mean, I just love a lot of things. The motor is there. I mean, I just think on both ends of the floor, man, I think he has a chance to be a two-way player for you. And watching film on him, man, I fell in love with him. And he's a guy, like I said, along with Liddell, those are two guys that I think fit perfectly on this Grizzlies team. And again, man, I wouldn't be surprised to see any of these guys end up on Beale Street.
Yeah, one of the things that I wrote down as I'm, you know, watching film and making notes on him, I put down secondary playmaker with a question mark because, you know, you rattled off his assist numbers. I think he averaged 4 assists this year.
Yeah.
And so there's definitely flashes of it there. You know, I think that his handle's probably good enough that he's going to be safe in the NBA, like as a secondary. But it's kind of – you look at De'Anthony Melton, and I think that Moore's handle is definitely better than his. But, you know, Melton, if he's not the primary ball handler, he does okay, right? Like if it's just periodic ball handling, he can make good decisions, put passes in the right spot. But if he's the primary ball handler, it gets a little scary. And I think that would be the case, at least early on for Moore. But I think that's something that you could see him improve on. And he could definitely be a great secondary playmaker. I wrote down quick hands, and you said pest. I wrote that down as well. Like he does a great job. The reach around, poking it out from behind and then getting out on the break. I saw him do that a number of different times on films, just, you know, getting in the right spot, not fouling, you know, the offensive player and knocking that ball loose. So the Grizzlies, since Zach Kleiman and this front office have taken over, they target high basketball IQ guys that are versatile defenders. And I feel like he definitely fits out of the 4 that we've talked about today, the last 2 that we've discussed, they definitely fit the bill. They fit
100%.
As you know, the guys that this front office seems to target, both of these guys fit the build. And so whatever happens in the draft, if they're going to be available, if Kleiman and company likes them well enough that they're willing to move up to get them, that may be a possibility as well. And as you can see from, you know, the stuff with Santi Aldama last year, if they think that there's a suitor in front of them that could possibly take them, they're going to do what they can do to move up and get their guy. And I'm all about that. If he's your guy, then he's your guy, you know, regardless of where you're picking. I saw a conversation earlier today about taking somebody with the 7th pick, and they're like, well, I don't know. That seems a little bit too early for him. I don't know if I would take him there. I would probably try to trade back. Well, if you trade back, there's no guarantee that your guy is going to be there. If you're inside your draft room, that is your guy, whether you got pick 7 or 17 or whatever, wherever you're at. To me, if you're locked in and you know that this is the best fit for your team and you're confident in their abilities, just draft them where you're at.
Yeah, I 100% agree with that. I've always felt that way. People are said, oh, well, because you're looking at mock drafts, and those are mock drafts. Like these, they don't have – most of these mock drafts, they're not based on inside info. They're just kind of the consensus thoughts on talent level and where these guys are. But I mean, if you're in the front office, you have conviction on the guys that you want. And if you're at that spot and that's the guy you want, go ahead and take him. I mean, that's kind of how I feel about that. But I mean, I think this is going to be a super interesting draft. Because like you said, I think in the last couple of years, there's been more of a consensus of where guys going. But I think after this 4, man, I think guys could be all over the place. And I think when you get out 22 and 29, there could be some guys that you expected to be there to be gone already, but I think there could also be guys that you didn't expect to be there that are sitting there right there for you. So I think that's what makes this fun, man. I love the draft, man. I can't wait to see what the Grizzlies do, man. I hate that they didn't end up getting that Lakers pick, man. They would have been in a super, super advantageous position, man, to have three picks in this first round, because, I mean, there would have been so many different things they could do with in being in that position, having those two late first and also a lottery pick there at the bottom of the lottery would have been awesome to see. So I hate that they missed out on that, because that would have made them super flexible. But I think it's still going to be fun, because I think Kleiman and company have shown that if they want to go and do something, they go out and make a move and get it done. So that's why this front office is fun. I think this draft is going to be fun, man. I think they're going to do something. I don't – if I had to bet, I don't think they just pick at 22 and 29 if I had to bet today.
Yeah, we talked about it with Candace on the last show that she was on, and I think it was pretty much across the board. We don't feel like there's any way that the Grizzlies execute all three picks that they have. They're either going to combine two of them and move up, or, you know, combine them, get future assets for them. I don't think that there's any way that they make – I wouldn't be shocked if they only make one pick in this draft, honestly. The comments about putting yourself in the best position to win, moving these assets to go out and get a guy that's going to put you in that position, I don't know that you can necessarily guarantee that's coming from the draft when you could use it. There's so many teams right now that are kind of in a transition spot that have guys that could be pieces to help push the Grizzlies over the edge, whether the Grizzlies go out and make that move for a vet or if they move up in the draft because they do feel like one of these guys can push them over to, you know, over the top. They're not going to be scared to do it.
No, not at all. I mean, I think they've shown that. I mean, you talk about last year where they jumped back in the first round to take Santi Aldama. I can't remember what team that they thought was it Utah or Oklahoma City? I think it was one of those two teams.
They traded with Utah to get back in. So I think
it must have been OKC there. I think they thought he had a promise.
OKC or Indiana.
It might have been Indiana that they felt that he had a promise for. I think it was both of those teams. I think he said he had talked to both of those teams and they really liked him. And I think Grizzlies had that intel on that, man. They jumped back in the first round and it made him a guaranteed player to jump up and take him. So I think that shows you jumping back in to get Bane, making the trade to get Brandon Clark. When they want guys, man, they have shown the propensity to go out and get them. So I don't think that's going to change anytime soon, man. As I always say, they're proactive instead of reactive. And that's something that we didn't see from the previous front office. And that's what you got to love about Executive of the Year, King Zach Kleiman, here with the Memphis Grizzlies.
Yes, sir. It feels good to have confidence in that front office as you watch so many other teams that don't have that. So many other fan bases don't get to enjoy that. So great spot to be in. We will wrap the show up here. Isaac, you got anything else you want to discuss before we get out of here, man?
Oh, man, I think we pretty much got it covered, man. All four of these prospects that we talked about tonight, I think, are guys that would fit really well on this Grizzlies roster. If you kind of look at their MO, like you said, guys that are switchable on defense, guys that play hard, guys that do things the right way. I think all four of these guys kind of fit that bill. So it'll be interesting to see if either of these four guys end up in a Grizzlies uniform, but I could definitely see it.
So I'm going to do a little bit of a shout out here. We've been shouting out Candace and her show. It's going to be going live. It's actually, she's got some episodes up on iTunes already for the Seahawks podcast for here at Sports Ethos. If you are interested in covering a Major League Baseball team or an NFL team, holler at me. I'm on Twitter at DavidW2111. Sports Ethos is expanding. We've got basketball. Our baseball division is up and running. Joe is doing a great job over there with fantasy baseball. And then we have JP heading up the football division. He's already, you know, pumping out content for football. Football is not that far away. Now is the time to be doing the study and to find out, you know, where you can get value in your fantasy football draft. So we have the fantasy guys in place, but if you want to be a team coverage person via podcast for any MLB or NFL team that is not already taken, holler at me on Twitter at DavidW2111, and we can talk about making that happen. You can get the show on Twitter at Ethos Grizz. We appreciate you guys tuning in. We will be back tomorrow, more than likely. Hopefully, we doing 4 or 6 tomorrow, Isaac. Where's it at, man?
Man, let's hit 6, man. Let's keep it going.
The 3 apiece from each of us tomorrow. We are looking forward to it. Isaac, let them know where they can find you and get us out of here, man.
Yeah, man, you can find me on Twitter at Isaac_Rivals. That's ISAAC_Rivals. As David said, we'll be back tomorrow night breaking out 6 more prospects, man. So we're enjoying this, man. I want to thank everyone for rocking with us. Hope you're enjoying this as much as we are, because we love doing this, man. We love pumping out content. We'll be right back tomorrow night. This is Ben Rizzo, Rizzo Podcast. This is David. I'm